Happy Friday, everyone. Thank you, all of you who are supporting Into the Word, and offer this invitation for those of you that might like to join in that effort. Just write down the contact information you'll hear at the end of today's program. Send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address. It'll be used for the radio broadcast fees. Thanks for taking care of that. Fridays, I urge every last one of you, as believers in Jesus Christ, the saved and sanctified ones, you need to have a home church. If you don't have one, you need to go out and find one quick. And then you need to get plugged in there where you worship and fellowship and study and serve and encourage to love and good deeds. All the things that the Scripture talks about that Christians are supposed to be doing in assembly together. And you need to do that on a regular basis. If you are currently looking for a home congregation and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, may I extend to you a very personal invitation to come, check us out, and perhaps join us in our effort in the kingdom. I'd like for you to go ahead and open your Bibles back to Genesis chapter number 19. And we are going to continue with the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and Zeboim and Admah, but not Bela. Because when the two angels forcibly evacuated Lot, his wife, and his two betrothed but unmarried daughters out of the walls of the city, they told them to head for the hills, the eastern hills, the place that will eventually be referred to as Moab, which is on the east side of the south bay of what we call the Dead Sea today. And Lot responded by saying, I can't make it. I can't get there. Let me go to this little city and be safe there. And that little city was Bela, but it becomes Zoar. And that is a place where we know it's located. It's on the southeast corner of the South Bay area of the Dead Sea, which is why I suspect, along with others, that the South Bay area is probably where the five cities of the plain were located. I further suspect that Sodom was on the southwest corner of the South Bay, because we know that Lot is leaving from Sodom, and he's being told to head to the hills east of the South Bay. And he says, I can't make it there, but I can make it to the little city of Bela. And so that makes the most sense if Bela, now Zoar, in the southeast corner of the bay, is a direct line from Sodom to the Moab Mountains, Sodom being in the southwest corner of the bay. All right, so let's go ahead and just pick up the story in verse number 19 of Genesis 19. Behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. You've shown me great kindness in saving my life, but I cannot escape to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die. Behold, this city is near enough to flee to. It's a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved. And he said, that is the angel, behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. So it is within the angel's prerogative to choose not to destroy Zoar. And this is a miraculous reprieve for the probably couple of hundred people living in this small city of Zoar, even though they are a very evil people, They've been self-centered and engaging in sinful practices. Because of the petition of a righteous man that he would go there and live, they are spared and given a little bit more time to maybe get their act together. So Zoar is the name now given to that reprieved city of Bela. Zoar is the Hebrew word for little, insignificant, of no account. So the angel said, "Escape there quickly, for I can do nothing till you arrive there." Their assignment from God is destroy the five cities of the plain, put an end to the sinfulness that is so bad there, but don't let Lot and his family be destroyed in the process. And so they are carrying out the instructions of the Lord within the parameters that God has given them. And so this angel says, yeah, okay, you can go there, but make it quick because I am on hold until you get there. And then Moses, reminding first the Israeli people that are reading this in his day, and now us, therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. Now, verse 23, the sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. So he did arrive at the city of Zoar on the southeast corner of the south bay of the Dead Sea. And once he arrived there, the judgment took place and he saw it from ground level, happening all behind him, or when he turned around, out in front of him. Then he who is rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, sulfur and fire from he who is out of heaven. So we've got fire coming down from the sky. And we've seen God do this before. This is the way it's described sometimes when he burns up a sacrifice that apparently a firebolt or a fireball or maybe lightning bolt comes out of the sky down to ground level. But there's also chemicals that are involved in this one. And verse 25 says, this started a reaction which overturned those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. So everything is obliterated in the target zone, with the exception of a little bubble of protection that is thrown up around Zoar. I'm going to offer some possible explanations of what might have happened here. We know that in the Middle East, there are a lot of underground petroleum pools. We know that in this area, because Moses told us earlier, there are bubbling pits of bitumen, a petroleum-like substance, that are all over this South Bay Valley. They'd been mining that product and selling it for a great big profit. My suspicion is that God's fire from the sky ignited all of the oil reserve under the South Bay and possibly even underneath other parts of the Jordan Valley, which the Dead Sea Valley is part of the Jordan Valley system, and that this burned up and exploded underneath these cities and changed the environment all up and down this region. And this might explain why there are no oil reserves underneath the Promised Land, even though there's tons of it nearby in Saudi Arabia. Just a thought. But it is an interesting thing that the wording here in the Greek is about a catastrophe. It is the overturning, the turning upside down of the land. And from here on out, that whole valley is going to be totally different. It'll never be the same. It'll never be green and prosperous ever again. And when you go and visit there now, and I'm hoping to get back there again next May, and maybe some of you might want to go along with me, we'll go down there. And it is very dry, and it is very brown, red, not green, because vegetation just doesn't grow there. So we have another part of the story that's told in verse 26, that Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. And I know there's been presentations in movies and cartoons about and comic books, graphic novels, about how she basically turned around and she looked and suddenly her whole body turned into salt. Maybe. But we do know this. Many of the trees that have barely held on next to a little wet weather stream, eventually when they die, they get covered in salt. The chemicals, the crystalline chemicals of this region. We know that, and I know this from personal experience, all of the rocks along the edge, the shore of the Dead Sea, they get encrusted with crystalline minerals that includes an awful lot of sodium chloride, a lot of salt. I have rocks that I brought back with me from my very first trip that you could rub on the salt on them and taste it, and it's a very strong, bitter salt. So it's just as possible that she was outside the bubble of protection, died, and covered with the salt. And that Lot may have seen that happen to her and knew exactly where her salt-encrusted body was and reported that, and that's how it eventually ends up here in our story. The most important part of it is she didn't survive the evacuation. She should have if she'd kept up with Lot and the two daughters, but she appears to have decided not to break her full ties with Sodom, with the place that she might have grown up. That's another thing that we don't know. Where did Lot's wife come from? It's by the time we get this story, it's been 25 years since Lot arrived in country with his uncle Abram. Probably a little over 20 years since he and Abram separated and he went his way. Did she already exist as his wife at that time? Maybe. Maybe she was from Mesopotamia. But it's also just as possible that he met her in Sodom and that these two daughters that they share grew up in their city of Sodom and were going to be married there in Sodom probably in their late teens. I think before we move on, I might want to use this as an illustration of it's very important, as Paul says, not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers. I think that, in my estimation, Lot and his wife were not yoke partners. I think he was committed to the one true God, in his heart. But I think he ended up being married to someone whose heart was in Sodom, whose heart was in a sinful place. And that's why he lost her here. Now, that doesn't mean he didn't love her. I think he's devastated by her death. But there was a lot of borrowing of trouble by being unequally yoked. So all you young people, please, don't even date people that don't have the same commitment to Jesus Christ that you have. Because you don't want to be caught up in one of those unequally yoked marriages. Verse 27. Now we shift back to the man that this story started with. Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before He Who Is. So the last place that he and God had talked. Now what had they talked about? If there's at least 10 righteous people in Sodom, will you spare the place? And God had said, yes. If there's at least 10, I will spare the place. So Abraham has gotten up early on the following day and gone back to that place where he can look down toward Sodom, look down into the valley. Now, he doesn't necessarily have a vantage point where he can see the city itself, but he can certainly see the valley break. And this is what he saw. He looked down towards Sodom and Gomorrah. I think they were the closest city to his encampment at Hebron. And toward all the land of the valley, he looked, and behold, the smoke of the land went up like the smoke of a furnace. Now, he probably heard things as well, because there's no doubt in my mind there would have been a lot of explosions during this whole destruction thing. He might have even felt some of it. Certainly there would have been some earthquake activity from such a major seismic event. But the thing that Moses lands on is that Abraham saw perhaps the fire of God fall, but he saw the smoke going up. And he knew that there weren't even 10 people. Not even 10 righteous people. And at this point, he didn't even know whether or not his nephew had made it out alive. And I'm guessing he started to grieve. Now, thankfully, he will find out later that his nephew did survive. But Lot will not come into this story anymore, other than the little bit we're about to read, because he will move outside the boundaries of the Promised Land, the east side of the Dead Sea Valley, and have a pretty rough life from there on out, it would appear. So verse 29, so it was that when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had lived. Now, it could be that those angels came back to Abraham to let him know, we finished our mission, we took Lot out. We sent him to Zoar. Zoar survived. Your nephew is safe. He is alive, and so are his two daughters, but not your niece-in-law. Possibly, they got that report. Now, in the remainder of our time today, we are going to talk about what happened next in Lot's life. Now, remember, the New Testament makes it very clear that Lot was a righteous man, but he was broken by what has happened here. And he makes some poor choices, and they are poor choices that have long-lasting repercussions. Remember that the book of Genesis is the book of beginnings. It is written for the Israeli people coming out of Egypt, heading for the Promised Land, and helping them to understand how the world started, how the world got messed up, how God sent the flood, how God restarted the world, how all the different ethnic groups came into existence, how the Promised Land became the land that God wanted the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to live in, why they were going back there from Egypt to live, but also how some of the local peoples are related to them in this story. So this is an origin story about the Moabites and the Ammonites, who were near neighbors of the Israelis. Genesis 19:30. Now, Lot went up out of Zoar. So he doesn't stick around and live in the only surviving city of the plain. He abandons it, and he lived in the hills with his two daughters, for he was afraid to live in Zoar. Now, why is he afraid? I would suggest that perhaps he's afraid that God's going to finish the job, that he knows that Zoar, Bela at that time, was on the original destruction list. And so he doesn't want to live in such a place. So he heads up into the mountains, into the hills that he'd been told to go into to begin with, a place that will eventually be called Moab. It's on the east side, immediate east side of the South Bay of the Dead Sea, modern-day Jordan today. So he lived in a cave with his two daughters. So he does not go back to having a Bedouin lifestyle, which he had before he moved into the city. So he's no longer a city dweller. He's no longer a tent dweller. He has decided to live in a cave. Now, I don't know if we can read too much into it. Caves are places that people sometimes go to hide out from disasters. We see that in some of the prophetic passages of the scripture that, you know, they hid themselves in rocks and caves and holes in the ground. Hide us from the face of the Lamb and the one that's on the throne. So things like that. It's a protective place. So maybe. Another thing about cave dwelling is there's plenty of them in Moab. There's plenty of them in that region. And they are out in the middle of nowhere. So I think there might be a little bit of that isolationism, that he has now decided to be a bit of a monk, a bit of a hiding out from society. So he lived in a cave with his two daughters. Now, after a period of time, we don't know how much time, but probably a couple of years or so, at least, the firstborn said to the younger, so they have a little conference, our father is old, so he's getting up there. Now, again, Abram at this time is about 100 when Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed, 99 going on 100. And I shared with you before that Lot is the son of Abraham's much older brother. And so it's possible that they were not too far from the same age. So Lot himself might be in his 80s, 90s, maybe he's approaching 100 as well. And so the oldest daughter says, our father's old. There is not a man on earth to come in to us after the manner of all the earth. So there's no one around here. When it says earth here, it can mean just land. Because their dad has got them out in the middle of nowhere. So we got no one that we can get married to. I mean, our betrothed are dead in Sodom's destruction. So we got nothing. We've got no opportunity to have kids. And that means, effectively, that this family tree dies. Verse 32, come, let us make our father drink wine, get him drunk, and then we'll lie with him that we may preserve offspring from our father. So this is the foolhardy plan they come up with to make sure that their family tree does not dead end. We'll bend the limbs in on themselves. We'll get the only man near us, our dad, drunk enough that he will be open to amorous relationships in the dark, you know, maybe not be able to tell that we're not mom, you know, who's recently deceased. And we'll do it on purpose to get pregnant. Keep that in mind. And thus we will preserve offspring from our father. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her mother, or her father, and he did not know when she lay down nor when she arose. The next day the firstborn said to the younger, behold, I lay last night with my father, let us make him drink wine tonight also. Apparently their cycles are in sync, so they are both aware that they are at the peak on this particular day of getting pregnant. Then you go in and lie with him that we may preserve offspring from our father. So they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. And thus both the daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. Now, we don't have enough time, so tomorrow, or Monday, next episode, we'll talk about how this sprang not just simply two people groups, but a new religion.